Welcome this evening for Cabinet. This is 15th of November 2018. Welcome to all of those and Councillor Gerrard as well. So this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. In addition, under the Local Authorities Executive Arrangements, Meetings and Access to Information England Regulation 2012, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of such images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. So let's start with item one, apologies. I understand we have apologies from Councillor Harper-Davis and also Councillor Poland, who is away. Item two, disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Does anyone have any interests that they wish to declare?
Thank you, Leader. Just to be transparent, just to let you know that I was the original chair of the five-year housing panel scrutiny group.
Yes, I was just going to say exactly the same thing. We seem to be missing Councillor Season. Okay, well, let's carry on. Anyway, right. Well, we may have to. We may have to. So, leaders' announcements. I have no formal announcements to make other than to thank all officers and councillors who were involved with the remembrance services on Sunday throughout the day. I have to say the number of people who have mentioned what an extraordinarily wonderful day it was, absolutely fantastic act of remembrance, but also I appreciate the amount of organisation that went into making it such a success was extraordinarily well executed. So thank you to all officers, particularly who were involved in making it such a success. Item four, minutes of the previous meeting. First of all, for accuracy, is everyone happy with the accuracy of those minutes? Right, and in that case, can I propose that we accept those minutes? Do I see seconder? Everyone's approving those. Okay, that's great, thank you. So, now on to item five, which is questions under Cabinet Procedure 10.7. We have had no questions submitted. Now, item six is actually the five-year housing supply scrutiny panel. We don't actually have Councillor Season here this evening to submit the panel report. So can I just ask the Chief Exec a quick question about procedure? My understanding would be that we probably need to defer this item until we actually have a councillor who can actually present it.
Councillor Seaton arrives later, you can deal with it later on.
Okay, later. Okay. Well, that also applies to item seven, which is the management of open spaces. So in which case, we will move on to item eight, which is the medium-term financial strategy. So can I ask Councillor Barclay to introduce this item, and then Simon Jackson, the Strategic Director of Corporate Services, will present the report.
Thank you, Leader. So this is our high-level strategy going forward for the next 3 years, showing what we know, assumptions that we've made. It outlines in as much detail as we can with the knowledge we're given where we're going. To cut to the quick, we need to spend reserves to the extent of about 1.5 million over the next 3 years. We need to make savings equating to about £1 million. Within the plan, you will see how we intend to use a mixture of increased income and also transformational savings. They are outlined in detail. The things that are affecting us are the number of uncertainties we've got, not least the fairer funding review from the government that comes up at the end of next year, the uncertainty surrounding new homes bonus, the fact that the new homes bonus may change in composition. In other words, at the moment we get 80% and the city gets 20%, or the county gets 20%. There may be a mix and match there. But fairly challenging financial circumstances, and it will need the cooperation of all members, lead members, officers, to actually make this plan work, because we are getting to the stage where we cannot continue to use reserves at the rate of 1.5 million. I would say to you that we are still in a very strong financial position at the end of 3 years, but we won't be unless we continue to find these savings and not increase expenditure. I've outlined the uncertainties that we face. We have done everything with the political environment and the challenges the country faces, and I know the leader's not keen to talk about them, but it's a fact, and it can have a major impact on the national economy, which in turn will have a impact on the amount of money that is available to local authorities. We still remain one of the lowest council tax authorities in the districts, among the districts, among the 201 districts, we're the 23rd lowest. We are increasing council tax by £5 next year. We get our funding mainly from council tax receipts, new homes bonus, retained business rates, and those are our main sources of funding. We're looking at every way we can to help ourselves, and we really do need to do that. I think the way that we're using our treasury management and the way we're trying to invest to get more money is helping us. As I say, within the plan, there is various ways that we've used our assets to increase income. We're trying to commercialise things to get more money coming in. We have digitalisation, and we're probably going to need to have service reviews to make sure that we are really doing everything we can, even not just statutory services, but non-statutory services, to make sure we're not just floating along on a historic model. As far as accommodation is concerned, we're also looking at home working to try and save money. To cut to the quick, some challenging times ahead. At the end of the period, we will still have £7 million worth of reserves. We will have about £3 million worth in working balances. But that does depend on this plan working and monitoring it and looking for these efficiencies, because we have to do that. The housing revenue account is in a sound position. We've got quite a large amount of money within it, which will keep us going. The amount that we've got, we collect £22.4 million in rental income, of which £21 million is from dwelling social housing. We have sufficient to cover the interest on the £79 million loan, and leave quite a lot to go towards improving the housing. I won't say any more. I'll leave the more involved details to Simon.
Thank you, Councillor Barclay, for actually a good comprehensive overview there. I'll just quickly run through some of the main highlights. So, first of all, to note that this is the final version of the medium-term financial strategy that will be recommended to Council. Since the previous version, there are two principal areas of change. So the new homes bonus, we have been able to finalise the numbers. So we don't necessarily know the amount yet, but we certainly do now know the number of houses that have been added to our council tax base. And unfortunately, that was a little bit lower than we were initially predicting. So that's a negative impact of about 300,000 for the 2019-20 year. That was offset somewhat by having looked at the new environmental services contract, or the likely impact of extending that contract into future years, and that actually has a positive impact of about 64,000 compared to the previous draft that you've seen. So that they're the sort of main numerical changes. We have, you know, the Cabinet have seen this before, but I will just run quickly through some of the key points. So in 2019-20, we are projecting 1.1 million use of reserves, a further 0.5 million in 2021. But in 2021-22, assuming we do hit our transformation and efficiency plan targets, and that the assumptions, of which there are many, all come to pass as predicted in the document, as projected in the document, which isn't necessarily likely because there are bound to be ups and downs. But if that all comes to pass, that would see the council having its expenditure match its income. So that would be a good stable position if we can achieve that. The numbers do come with a health warning, so there are lots of uncertainties, but actually one thing that is quite helpful for us compared to previous years is that we have been promised the settlement, the financial settlement for 2019-20 on the 6th of December this year, so that's actually a week two earlier than usual, so that's actually a helpful thing, so we can look out for that date and see certainly what the projections for, how accurate the projections for 2019-20 were. One thing I would like to reiterate, and for the record really, this document is not the budget. So in some of the feedback and some of the scrutiny we've had, there does seem to be, or has seemed to be, some slight confusion about what this document is. So it's not the budget, although obviously it will inform our budget setting process, but it doesn't actually constrain us with any decisions we would like to make from a budgetary perspective. So I just would like to reiterate that. And maybe quickly running through some of the key areas. So on page 65, we record where we are on council tax. As Councillor Barclay said, we are a low council tax authority. We are projecting both an increase in the main borough council tax of £5. How that's actually split between the main borough and the Loughborough special rate is a matter of taste, but in terms of the overall number and the revenues the council receives, it doesn't make any difference. But we are also projecting growth in our housing stock, which will drive much of the increases in council tax projected. So we can see for the borough, we're projecting around £7 million for 2019-20. As I say, Loughborough special rate, for the purposes of these projections, we're not assuming any increase in council tax, but again, we can see some growth to around £1.2 million for 1920, just based on an increase in the number of houses within the borough. One thing to note is around revenue support grants. So this was sort of up around the sort of £4 million mark in 2014-15. For 2019-20, that'll be just £165,000 before disappearing to nothing at all in ensuing years. So that's obviously a major impact on the council's finances over those years. Since April 2013, we've been able to retain a share of business rates. So the highlight or headline of that, it's a 50% business rate scheme retention. In practice, we retain about 9%. Very much based on what the government believe our funding need is. We've used some standard sort of assumptions. We're essentially projecting a fairly flattish position with business rates increasing through inflation, and that would account for about £5 million worth next in 2019-20. New homes bonus is quite complicated, to say the least. So there is a little bit more of an expanded explanation compared to the draft MTFS going through some of these things. I mean, I think what we've concluded is the housing growth in the period from when, on which the new homes bonus revenues are based, which is autumn to autumn, so October to October in a particular year, that wasn't as good as we were projecting for this financial year. But having spoken again in some detail to our planners and having looked at some of the other underlying data that we have, we still think we're in a strongly positive growth trend for housing in the borough. So we still believe that in future years that housing will be delivered in line with our previous June projections. I think the only thing, as Councillor Barclay alluded to, the Fair Funding Review might change how new homes bonus is calculated, or it might actually end up eliminating new homes bonus with potentially offsetting funding through the new method of business rates retention, which is due from 2020-21. So there are quite a lot of figures around that on table 10 on page 72, but notwithstanding the revisions, we are still expecting £3.7 million worth of new homes bonus next year, and it remains a very substantial part of the council's revenue streams. And again, as Councillor Barclay went through, the table 11 shows some of the scenarios we have and some of the ups and downsides that may be possible within the new homes bonus scenario. We've got table 8 just details some key operational assumptions and what's included in the budget and what are the sort of key changes compared to the 2018-19 base budget. So these are tabulated. Probably the main one of note is around the environmental services contract. So that actually accounts for a lot of the uptick in the operational expenditure that we see. I think the feature of that is not that necessarily our costs are increasing very much out of kilter. It's just that in the current period we are benefiting from a relatively cheap period for the environmental services contract, reflecting the fact that the fleet has been fully depreciated. As we move forward into a new contract period, clearly the costs of the fleet have to be reflected in the overall cost, and that actually results in a little bit of an uptick in our overall environmental services costs. So if you were to look on sort of page 75, you see the increases of 294 for 1920, then 910 in nearly £1 million in 2020-21 and 1.3 million in 21-22. But that is, to be clear, though, a combination of costs, plus obviously there is some growth in the borough and the additional volume of work does also drive the additional costs. Transformation and Efficiency Plan, Councillor Barclay's alluded to, so that's set out on page 78. So a number of things that we are doing. A lot of the numbers for 1920 actually, and the principal number around fees and charges, actually that reflects, rather than any increase in fees, it actually reflects the success of our current operations and the revenues we're currently achieving. So certainly the biggest number in there, the commercialisation around garden waste, actually we are currently achieving those type of revenues. So that's a reflection of the good stuff that's happening already. But it is important that the total of 480,000, we do achieve something in that order of magnitude for the current budget round. And actually, as we're currently in that sort of process, and we are up and around that level of saving, so that's positive so far in the current budget setting process. The summary of the financial projections is on table 11, and you can see the use of reserves in each cumulative in the year and cumulative at the bottom of that table, if you would care to analyse it. And then the detailed analysis of the reserves is set out on table 18, and at this point I have to confess there are some missing figures. So on page 82, under the sort of analysis of revenue reserves, we've got some missing figures for working balances, which should be, so I think you could actually construe them from the totals above and below, but there are figures missing of 3893, 3367, and 3440. And I think that's probably it. So there's lots of detail in there. There are lots of assumptions. There is a health warning. 6th of December will give us some, hopefully, the answers for 2019-20. Going forward, though, with the fair funding review and other wider uncertainties in the economy, it's difficult to project much further forward than that, but obviously happy to take any questions on any of that.
Case. Obviously, a very comprehensive. Oh, Councillor Vardy.
Did you just sigh then, Paul? No. It's not a question, actually, it's a comment. It's a pleasant comment as well, because each year, for a number of years now, I've sat here and I've heard these presentations from both Councillor Barker and yourself and others about this council's financial position, how it moves forward and how it protects and preserves our economy, if you like, our budgets and things. And it always amazes me, because I'm not an accountant, and I never pretend to be one, how you manage to come to get from A to B and be able to project forward and in such an accurate way that Prevu's in the past, it's not a guess this, every year is always to give or take a little bit, it's always bang on. And it amazes me, and I think you're to be congratulated and thanked, and our communities ought to be grateful for the professionalism that you show in preparing these papers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments that anyone wishes to raise? Right, in that case, Councillor Barclay, can I ask you to make a proposal?
So I would make recommendation that that it be recommended to Council that the MTFS for 2019-22 attached as an appendix is approved for the reason to identify the financial issues affecting the Council and the Borough in the medium term and in order to provide a base for priority to be set and inform the Council's budget setting process.
Thank you very much. Councillor Smidovich.
Yes, I'm happy to support those recommendations.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Councillor Seaton, I can see that you've managed to unblock your lorry and escape your house. Can I just suggest that maybe we just do quickly item 9?
Yes. And
then we'll come back and do the items 6 and 7. Thank you. So, Councillor Barclay, if I can ask you to introduce the Treasury Management Report or Treasury Management Update Mid-Year Review, which is item 9, and then Simon Jackson, who is Strategic Director of Corporate Services, if you'd like to then carry on.
So this is the mid-year review of the Treasury Management Strategy and shows the position that we're in. We haven't reached any of the indicators. In essence, what this does is regulate how we manage our cash flow on a day-to-day basis. We have between £30 and £59 million worth of funds under management at any one time, mainly made up of council tax that we collect on behalf of Leicestershire County Council, the Fire Service, the Police Authority. But it also looks at our investment strategy, what sort of financial instruments we can invest in. Security, liquidity and preservation of capital is a key point, but we have increased the amount of risk we take on the investments. We've invested in some property funds, some local authority bonds, and that has had quite a dramatic impact on our income in the region of about £250,000. It also looks at how much we're borrowing. As you know, we are borrowing on the housing revenue account about £79 million. We have another £2 million worth of borrowing on the general fund. Make sure that we can afford that we're not overstretching ourselves. The very end of the report gives you a glossary of the terms that are used within the report, which is quite handy. It explains in sort of words of one syllable exactly what all the terms mean, which is good. On page 98, we have a breakdown of the £51 million that we hold and as at the 30th of September, and how is that spread out between the various different institutions. So, all in all, I can recommend this to you because we haven't reached any of the prudential indicators. Obviously, the financial situation of the country, the economic analysis, both worldwide and in England, is included in here from our fund advisors. We do take advice from external advisors, and so far, so good, we're on track with everything. So I'll hand over to Simon and see if he would like to add anything else.
Thank you, Councillor Barclay. I think maybe I won't add too much. Just to reiterate, really, this is the Treasury Management Update for the half year, and maybe I would just refer to paragraph 22, which just does set out and makes it clear there are no policy changes to the Treasury Management strategy at this point in time. So that's probably the key thing. The indicators all show a sound position as they have done historically, reflecting certainly on the general fund, the council's low level of borrowing. There's quite a bit of detail in here, but I'll just stop there. And if there are any questions anyone has, then I'm happy to attempt to answer those. Thanks.
Thank you. much, Simon. Does anyone have any questions they wish to ask Simon about the paper? Nope, I can't see any questions. So that's good. Thank you very much. Councillor Barclay, can I ask you to make a proposal?
So I'd like to make recommendations as outlined on page 85 for the reasons outlined on page 85.
Councillor Rawlings.
Thank you, Lydia. Yes, I'd like to second the motion.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Okay, so now we're going to go back to... thank you very much, Simon. Can we go back now to item 6, which is the 5-year housing supply scrutiny panel? And can I ask Councillor Seaton, who's chair of this particular scrutiny panel, to come to the table? Councillor Vardy will briefly introduce the item, and then Adrian Ward, as the head of strategic support, will present the report. Councillor Seaton will then present the panel's recommendations, and then if there are any questions of clarity that we wish to ask Councillor Seaton, then we'll have the opportunity at that point to do so. So if I can ask Councillor Vardy. I'm only halfway through my list, Councillor Vardy. Thank you. So Councillor Vardy, brief words of introduction, please. Thank you.
Sorry, me in brief. Yes, thank you. Yes, I actually welcome this this panel review. I think they've done a really excellent job. It was worthwhile, and I think it was relevant to the concerns of councillors and indeed some of our communities as well, to understand the implications of a 5-year supply, how it all works, and how it's all. It's not as simple as it would seem at the outset. So that's it. I went along to one of the panel meetings and I found it was quite good. It was received, the information, and there was some really good questioning by members of the panel, including the chairman. I think that that will do as an introduction before we go through each of the individual recommendations, leader.
Thank you, leader. I'll be very brief because I'm only introducing the covering report. The panel's report is appended in full to my report. Just to explain the format of my covering report, we've extracted the panel's recommendations one by one and the reasons that panel gave for those recommendations. We have an officer response from the head of planning and regeneration, and then the officer's recommendation in response to the panel's recommendation. If I could just ask Cabinet, when you come to make decisions on each of the recommendations, for the benefit of the minutes, if you could be very clear what exactly it is you're deciding and the reasons. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Seaton, if I can ask you to introduce the panel's paper.
Thank you, Chair, and apologies. I've been running all over trying to locate where the lorry driver was. And it was in the first business I went to, but nobody realised. Anyway, this panel was requested and subsequently formed following the frustration felt by many members that the planning application stage, many infill sites were being processed, and when presented at planning, they were being recommended to be passed by the officers and reluctantly having to be passed by the planning committee, even though the locations proposed for the developments was not identified as an area for development in the core strategy. The reasons for this, as you know, was Charnwood's inability to demonstrate a 5-year housing supply. A scope document was prepared by Councillor Taylor and Councillor Snott, and invites were sent out to join the 5-year housing supply scrutiny panel. The panel consisted of 7 councillors and supported by 2 officers. Initially, Councillor Taylor was selected as chair. However, following her move to the cabinet, I became chair by default, more than design, as I was the only member of the panel on SMB. At its first meeting, the panel identified possible reasons for there not being a 5-year supply, despite having 3 major housing developments in Charnwood. Following the reasons identified, specific witnesses were selected to attend the next 3 meetings. These consisted of developers from the SUS in Charnwood, a councillor from a neighbouring district who self-identified as not having any issues with developments not being realised. The lead member for planning, as well as the principal officer and group leader for planning in Charnwood. All invitees were attended and were very helpful and contributed to the panel's five recommendations. And in the case of the developers, they were asked the same pre-prepared questions, and it was felt by the whole panel that they were quite candid in their responses. Apart from the recommendations, the panel wished to pass on comments of observations made that would address communication issues and delays where staff leave the organisation. Recommendation 1 and 2 revolve around KPIs being added to the business plan. Recommendation 3, to write a further letter from Charnwood to the government raising concerns regarding introducing sanctions for non-compliance of developers. Recommendation 4 was to address what was identified as a blockage to developments through reserved matters in the S106. However, I believe that this has already been addressed by the recent introduction of pre-application service, and this combined with the reduction of pre-commencement conditions being less. I believe that probably recommendation has been covered already. Recommendation 5 was made to ensure that the core strategy is reviewed so it remains relevant and reflects the current unscheduled growth in Charnwood. Thank you.
If you can just stay put for 2 seconds, Councillor Seaton. Are there any questions of clarity or further information that anyone wishes to ask Councillor Seaton about the panel's report? Obviously, an extraordinarily well-presented report. Thank you very much, Councillor Seaton. So, thank you very much. If you wish to leave at the moment, and if I can invite Richard Bennett, who's the Head of Planning and Regeneration, to come to the table. And then, Richard, if you could add any comments in response to the panel's paper, that would be helpful, and then we can ask you any questions for clarity, etc.
Thank you, Leader. I haven't got anything specific to say other than to generally point out that the concerns that members have raised about the ability to maintain a five-year supply is something that's been felt by councillors nationally, and government has been looking at some of the reasons why development is held up in districts. As members will know, this district has granted planning permission for more houses than it actually needs to meet its housing needs. But you know, the issue is that they're not coming forward. And the government commissioned Oliver Letwin, Sir Oliver Letwin, I should say, in autumn 2017 to look at this as part of a review of build-out rates. And that final report of that independent review was announced by the Chancellor in the budget speech a couple of weeks ago. So there is a common understanding of the issues that members are feeling nationally.
Thank you very much. Has anyone got any comments or questions they wish to ask? Councillor Barclay.
I think it's a good thing that we had this panel report. I think there's some sort of misunderstanding. Certainly, it clarified in my mind the concept of the five-year supply of land, and it's almost like a sausage machine going along, and it's a moving target. It's not one that is automatically approved. The fact that we have a plan, that we have a five-year supply of land, does not mean that other applications aren't considered and approved outside the areas of the plan. Is that correct? In areas of permitted development? Because I think members' concerns and feelings are that if we have a five-year supply of land, if we have a plan, then the rest of the borough is protected and there will be no other development outside that plan and areas of permitted development. And I think a lot of the concerns feature around the fact that there is a misconception that once we have the plan and the five-year supply, we can lock it all down and there's no other development in the whole borough apart from within the plan. But actually, that isn't the case because we're delivering the housing numbers outside areas of the plan. I mean, my knowledge of planning is very limited. It's like Serbo Croat to me, but if you could explain, that would be good.
Through you, Leader. I think what the government policy is that if you are unable to demonstrate a five-year supply, then your development plan is considered to be out of date, or certainly those aspects of it which seek to control the location of housing. We do have a five-year supply at the moment, so that means that we can rely on the development plan to be the primary starting point when deciding planning applications when they're put to the local planning authority. So the development plan obviously sets out the council's expression of what is the sustainable location of housing in the borough, and it focuses that development on the edge of Leicester towards Loughborough and Shepshed first before looking at smaller places in the borough through a hierarchy. The plan does provide for circumstances where potentially small-scale developments adjoining settlements in the lower order settlements, but it's talking about small-scale stuff in exceptional circumstances. So it's never say never. If development is sustainable, there may be good arguments to weigh in the balance. But generally speaking, I think that the general thrust of what you're saying is that if we have a five-year supply, we can rely on our development strategy to control where development goes, and that means that we shouldn't be attacked by this unplanned development that members have raised concerns about.
Thank you very much, Richard. That addressed it completely, and for once I feel though the fog has cleared and I understand it.
Thank you very much. Councillor Smithridge.
Thank you. Richard, would I be right in thinking though in the past when we have had just a few thousand short, I'm not talking mega amounts, that we have in fact, if it's gone to appeal when we have refused something in application, the inspector has looked favourably on the numbers we are predicting but haven't actually been built. They have seen common sense when we're almost there, not quite. So I wouldn't want anybody to think that it was, you know, down to the last house, if we haven't got 5,000, that's it, you've got to have them built. Does that make sense?
through you, Leader. I think I'm going to take you back to the standard script for planning. Each application needs to be considered on its individual merits having regard to the development plan, unless material considerations indicate otherwise. In other words, every case is different and has to be treated on its own merits, and inspectors have come to varying conclusions on the various different sites across the borough depending on the circumstances that are at play at that time. I would say that there have been occasions where we've had, for example, a 4.96 year supply of housing where the inspector has in the balance gone in favour of the council on an appeal decision, but that's because perhaps the development that the inspector has been considering has been of poorer quality in sustainability terms, and in the balance the inspectors felt that the appeal should be dismissed. Equally, we've had cases the other way around where the inspector has said you don't have a five-year supply, that's the be-all and end-all in this particular case. So it depends. I think the key thing that members need to appreciate, I suggest, is that just because you've stepped over the Rubicon, the threshold to have a five-year supply, doesn't necessarily mean that you are safe, as it were. It is a sausage machine, to quote Councillor Barclay, and you have to keep feeding the pipeline with new permissions in order to maintain that control over development in your borough.
Thank you very much. A question from Councillor Vardy, I think. Or...
Just to help Cabinet now, Richard, can you just explain, we talked about the five-year supply, what methodology is engaged to create that figure? How is it worked out? How is it formulated? How often does it take place officially? Is there an official date, for instance, for the five-year supply? And how accurate is it on an ongoing basis?
So the government requires us to do an assessment of five-year supply annually based on the position as of the 31st of March each year. That is the assessment of supply which is used by inspectors when considering planning applications. Their starting point is the five-year supply as of the 31st of March. What we do is a survey of all the housing sites in the borough to understand how many of the sites with planning permission have been completed, how many have not yet been started, and how many have lapsed. And we also engage with the developers of those sites to understand what their projections are for completions moving forward. So the exercise is quite involved. It usually takes about 6 weeks from start to finish. And once we've completed that exercise, we usually publish the five-year supply figure around about May, June time. And that's our figure that we rely on. Now, we have explored the prospect of being able to provide sort of mid-year estimates of five-year supply, but it's only ever going to be partial information, and we can't really rely on it. And it gives whilst it might give some indication of direction of travel, it's not anything that we can rely on in decision making. However, when we are in appeal situations, we do try to provide that estimated position for inspectors to show the direction of travel, particularly where we are very close to the five-year threshold. But as I say, it's not a clear-cut position. So it is a very involved exercise. It takes a lot of time, and I'm not going to try and attempt to explain the detailed methodology for how we project forward all the numbers and how it actually works in practice. But I think if members were thinking that this was something that we could keep a sort of a monthly tab on, it's not something that we can actually do in practice in any sort of reliable way.
Thank you.
I was just going
to... Okay, I will just follow on as well in that case, that's fine. And unless you've got another point on that one as well. So the only question I was going to ask in that case, the direction of travel, I think, is probably quite important for us as councillors and also for Plans Committee to actually understand where things are going. And one of the things maybe within recommendation one that we could possibly look at is actually publishing quarterly on the basis that performance figures are actually presented quarterly direction travel. In other words, indicating whether the five-year supply is moving upwards or downwards as part of the performance reporting on the basis of giving us a guide as to where it's heading at any particular time. I think that would be probably quite helpful without necessarily having to give a precise figure. Councillor Berger, is that pretty well what you were going to ask?
Through your leader, I think we'd need to look at that quite carefully and see how we could present that information so it's not misleading for anybody. If we can sort of show a direction of travel. I think in looking at the scrutiny panel recommendations, we recommend that we publish our annual figure as part of the business plan process on an annual basis. Thinking how we could break that down into sort of quarterly figures, I think it's difficult. But if there's something we can do to assist members in their understanding of direction of travel, then we could look to do that perhaps. If not part of the business plan, but as part of our quarterly communications that we do with members anyway, well, we could certainly explore that with Councillor Vardy through our our working relationships as we move forward and try and find a way which will fit to provide members with that confidence.
I think we'll probably come to some words when we come to recommendation. Can I take Councillor Rawlings? I know he's got a question.
Yeah, it's very much on that point, actually, and just going to ask, Richard, whether or not you are collecting data throughout the year or whether you just intensify that to kind of a 6 or 8 week period to calculate the figure each March, or whether you're kind of looking at builds as they come through and looking at applications each month, which might make it a bit easier to provide more frequent updates to members.
Through you, Leader. Yes, we do. We collect the data live, so as it's coming in, we're collecting it, and it populates the spreadsheets that we have. The problem we have is in the communication with developers and stakeholders who provide us with their forecasts of build-out rates moving forward and how we set that out in the trajectories. That's the difficulty, because we invite the stakeholders to give us that information. We provide them a window of opportunity to do that. And they don't have to do it, and that's the problem. So if we're doing that on a quarterly basis, we are increasing their workload as well as our own, and we're not necessarily going to get the buy-in and commitment from developers. So that's the challenge, really. So as I say, what we can do is we can show we can update all the completion data and the lapse data, the stuff that we have control of, but the stuff that we don't have control of is the key issue for us in providing an accurate figure. So whilst we can show a sort of a direction of travel, we can't give you it's partial information. That's the issue.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any further questions? Because otherwise I'm going to release Richard from the table. There's one more for Councillor Midwood and also Councillor Taylor. So after those two questions, I'll release you from the table, Richard, and then we'll actually have a general discussion amongst ourselves rather than just asking you questions. Thank you.
It might be a bit of a simplistic question, but are there any sanctions at all? I mean, if a builder says or a developer says we're going to have 500 by January the 1st and they have lots of foundations down and nothing completed, is there anything that's ever built into the contract to start with, or is that just a total no-no?
Through you, Leader. No, there isn't any penalty at the moment. This is one of the things that Oliver Letwin's been looking at, and in the recommendations that have been set out to the government is a range of measures to try and impose some control over what developers are doing once they've got planning permission to try and make these houses get built out quicker. So I think, you know, we've not had this report very long, and we need to look at this and understand it a bit more thoroughly. And we need to understand what the government's response to this is going to be before we can sort of get that picture as to what measures might be offered to the local planning authorities, you know, moving forward. So at this stage, no. Short answer.
Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Leader. Just about recommendation four with the section 106, Councillor Seaton said that she felt that recommendation now had been covered. So I'm just interested to know what's changed since the last review of 2015 and what we might found if we did another review on best practice now.
Through you, Leader. I think the issue around section 106, concerns that members had around the way that the process functioned and how members can get involved in helping to inform what contributions can be secured through those legal agreements was very thoroughly reviewed back in 2015. And I think that the problem with section 106 is we're not in control of the whole process. So I think some of the concerns that have been raised about section 106 relates to the bit that we don't have control over. Bringing forward planning obligations in a legal agreement is relies on negotiation and agreement by third parties with the Borough Council, and third parties have their own particular timetables and agendas that they're following, and we cannot control how they engage in that process. So I think my advice to members is that we've actually come a long way in improving the way that the council operates its Section 106 process, certainly that aspect of it which we can control. We do encourage developers to work with us on defining what planning obligations are necessary for a particular proposal, particularly through our pre-application process. And we do try to persuade developers to have a draft agreement so that that can be presented to Plans Committee alongside the committee report, you know, at the point where we seek a resolution, so that in effect committee is granting planning permission, including the legal agreement, rather than just resolving to grant it subject to a legal agreement to follow on. But what we find, and as detailed in the report, I say what developers very often want to get that resolution from Plans Committee before they invest in the time and effort to then negotiate on the detail of the agreements, because those negotiations can be very protracted and take a long time and cost a lot of money, so that they manage their own risk in that way. So in my view, I think the council has come a long way on refining the 106 process. We have a good protocol in place. Sometimes it's difficult to make sure that that protocol is followed every time to the letter, and we're working hard to try and address that. But I think that we've come as far as we can on that side of things. So that would be my advice.
Okay. Any further questions of Richard? Otherwise, we're going to release him from the table, and then we can have a discussion amongst ourselves about the recommendations. Sorry, Councillor Rawlings.
Sorry, just a very brief thing on in terms of like the enforcement measures and the government review. I know you say that we're still sort of considering the implications of it, but I just wonder what your thoughts are on actually kind of driving developers to build houses once they've got permission, and whether you think realistically we or the government will be, well, I suppose you can't answer for the government, whether as a council we'll realistically be able to do anything.
Sorry, leader. Whether the council could do anything about...
In terms of enforcing developers to actually build out a site, can we realistically do anything at the moment or in the future?
Through you, leader, I think what the government, what the review recommends to government is that the council tries to take control by allocating specific sites to its local plan, where it's defining the terms of what can be built on that site. And that furthermore, the councils consider establishing development companies to bring those sites forward. There's a lot of stuff in this review around the council taking control of land at more advantageous values, and then being able to transfer that value to develop the land. And at this stage, I think it would be ill-advised to speculate on how this will play out in the process. Obviously, the development industry will want to have its own views on this, as well as the council in due course, when the government comes up with a policy response to it, if indeed it does choose to do so. So I think at this stage, your officers will want to have a look at this carefully and understand what exactly the implications are before we jump to any conclusions as to whether it's advantageous or disadvantageous.
Thank you very much. Any further questions before we release Richard? Margaret?
Yes. Sorry. Can I just ask, leader? So if this is we're making a decision today at this moment in time, so should this can be amended fairly easily? Can we make our recommendations sort of be written to sort of accommodate changes that might be made within a few months possibly? So I was sort of thinking, well, I don't want to make a decision tonight that would be a tablet of stone that would bind us to anything.
So at the moment, we're obviously reviewing the panel's paper that's come to us. So there are five recommendations in the report. What we'll need to do this evening is actually decide the five recommendations that we wish to make in response to those presented by the panel. I'll ask at one point for Councillor Vardy to, I think, sum up on behalf of this Cabinet as to those five recommendations, and then we'll have a chance to actually vote on those. I mean, I think it's up to us to actually make sure that those recommendations are appropriate, given the content and the recommendation of the panel itself, but also accommodating any of the comments that have actually been discussed or any of the answers that have been given in the discussions that were taking place. So I think hopefully we'll come to something that will make sense when we actually come to the five recommendations. Okay. So with that, Richard, I'm going to release you to captivity, or release from captivity.
From.
Roam free, escape. But, of course, you're very welcome to listen to the discussions that are now going to take place. So with that, really, we're just going to now discuss the five recommendations. Can I ask, to start off with, I think, for Councillor Vardy to maybe summarise the five recommendations and sort of make a proposition on each of those in relation to what the panel's proposed, and then if we wish to debate those any more than we can do, or alternatively we can decide that those are actually appropriate. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Lady. Yes, that seems to be a logical way to take this forward. If we start off then, I mean, we've had a great information from the panel and from helpful on the technical aspects from Richard Bennett. And I think, really, there's not a lot to say that we've not already read, but I shall go through them, if you think it's appropriate, one by one, and just give you my view and what my recommendation would be at this point, subject to any amendments that you wish to put on it.
Can I just, at that point, point out that Laura will be trying to actually write down specific propositions. So when it comes to actually making an actual recommendation, we'll just be mindful of the fact that this is actually something that Laura will be trying to make sense of.
Of course. So if I draw your attention to panel recommendation one, that the council's business plan be amended to include the five-year housing supply figure as one of the council's KPIs. Now, there's been debate this evening already talking about how often these figures are produced and the technicalities engaged in producing these figures on a regular basis. Are they going to be accurate? For sure, for certainly, would it be in the public realm? Would that be helpful or not? My recommendation would be that including the panel recommendation one, but to include that on a quarterly basis, that a report is prepared for the councillor plans training so that they can all be informed at that point where the trend might be. If that makes any sense, please, before Laura finishes off, you get what I'm saying, that on a quarterly basis, there's quarterly plans training, and that it might well be that whatever figures we have then, we can indicate to the members through that process, rather than any public or formal process, which wouldn't be accurate.
This is verbally communicated rather than necessarily written.
Yes. Well, people can write it down if they want to when they're there, but that's what I'm thinking. But I hope you understand what I'm saying. For the purposes of keeping our members and the plans committee informed of the trend that is the 5-year supply, not inaccurate necessarily to the next first decibel point.
Direction of travel.
Yeah, direction of travel.
Thank you, Leader. I'm worried that if we do that, it will just get lost in the Plans Committee and will just be noted and not discussed. And I think it should go to the Performance Scrutiny Panel quarterly or whenever that meets during the year, just for them to have an oversight of it and a direction of travel. I took on board what Richard Bennett was saying, that there's things out there with the external developers that we can't control, but I still think we should be scrutinising the direction of travel. So I'm happy for it to go to Plans Committee, but I'm worried that it would just get lost there, and I think it should go to Performance.
So just one clarification. I think Councillor Vardy was talking about plans training rather than necessarily just plans committee. So that would be available to all members rather than necessarily just the plans committee. As far as performance is concerned, so I think the direction of travel is probably the key on the basis that the because of the accuracy issue, we need to be careful about what information we're presenting in case it actually gets used, obviously, because any information that's presented to performance is obviously published through mod.gov and therefore available on a public basis. So the question is whether this information is helpful verbally transmitted or whether it's actually a hard in stone KPI, and I think that's probably something that we need to discuss. Councillor Rock.
Yeah, it's very much on that point, actually. What I was going to say is I can't see how an informal figure quoted sort of four times a year will fit with the business plan and monitoring it as a KPI. I think it's got to be kind of the only indicator you have is the annual figure, not an inaccurate quarterly figure. That's my only concern with the proposal.
Okay. So I think at the moment, my understanding of what's been relayed by Councillor Vardy is that the KPI, which is the hard figure, the annual figure, would go into the corporate plan and actually be an annual KPI. And then the direction of travel would be verbally communicated to the plans committee. Now, it could also be verbally communicated to the performance panel as well. But because of its inherent inaccuracy, that it isn't used in such a way that it becomes a reference point for third parties. Do we understand that, or is that a problem?
Can I get? It's a bit generic, but that the council's business plan include the 5-year supply as a key performance indicator from 2019-20, and that quarterly direction of travel indicators be made available to members as required. Because in that case, they could go wherever you want them to go. Okay. Would that meet it?
Are we happy with that? Yep, I can see nods.
Yes.
Okay, in that case,
that
sounded coherent. not that yours didn't sound coherent, Councillor Vardy. So can I?
Sorry, I'm sorry.
In that case, if we're happy with that, we'll take a vote at the end on each of these, but if we're happy with that, then we'll move on to recommendation 2. Well, I was going to take a vote purely at the end on all recommendations. Yeah, for the reasons stated already.
We've done that one. 1, 2, the council's business plan. Well, we've already discussed that, haven't we? So, moving on to 3.
Sorry, on recommendation 2.
Council's business plan be amended to include the various deadlines by which planning applications.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Yeah, well, if everybody else is, that's fine. 3, the chair of the panel and the lead member of the panel will write a letter to the government reinforcing the need for enforcement sanctions for non-completion of developments. I would like us to have assimilated the Letwin report and that implications before we write any letter. So if I can suggest that write a letter as appropriate, once we've assimilated the Letwin report and its implications for Charnwood.
Okay, if I can summarise that, we note
the panel's recommendation, item 3, and that once we have considered the draft report produced by Sir Oliver Letwin, that the chair of the lead member for planning, in consultation with the chair of the panel, write with any further recommendations from this authority
to the
Letwin report.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so if we can move on to panel recommendation 4.
Sorry, thank you. I'm being managed here, Leader, very well as well. So I think that was covered by Richard Bennett's report to Cabinet this evening about the improvements we've made. I'm just going to talk about this for a second, that if for those of you who recall, there were some issues to do with 106 and members' consultation and various other aspects to do with Section 106. Remember, this is all to do in the context of a five-year supply, not the individual reserve matters and plans, etc. So you have to take the context of that. Now we're having major plans now, and members are being consulted on the process, on the Section 106, and asked and consulted. And I feel that there has been some very, very positive movements on that. So I would actually support the panel recommendation. Thank you. I was waiting for you to do that.
It was really useful, actually, getting the answer from Richard about Section 106, and I accept that there's things that are out of our control still, but I do still think we need to have a look at best practice internally and how Section 106 are managed within the department and management oversight. I think there's still improvements that we could make internally, so I would welcome... if Richard's, you know, sort of saying that there's not a lot we can do externally, but internally I think there's still room for improvement, and I would be happy for that to go forward.
Okay, Councillor Rawlings.
Yeah, I'd agree with what Debs has said there, and also, oh, sorry, Councillor Taylor, and if you look through the responses from consultees and people that were interviewed by the panel, you can see it's littered with references to stakeholders that are saying changes in case officers and staff retention is a real issue for the department and planning. So a best practice review looking at our internal processes, I think, would be welcome. Even though there was one conducted a few years ago, I think it could focus on staffing and retention.
Councillor Vardy.
Thank you. I think I'd appreciate your comments there, but I think you're widening the aspect of this to other areas. The Section 106 is reviewed. There's quarterly meetings of Section 106 issues chaired by, I think it's Chris Trail, where all issues to do with Section 106 are indeed reviewed on a quarterly basis. And I, as you're no doubt aware, the Section 106, I think it's called a champion somewhere along the lines, matters and relating to Section 106 are brought to my attention and through to the head of planning, or indeed to the other sections, which are, you know, the open spaces and various other places we actually do about the delivering of Section 106. So I actually think that there is a review process, an ongoing review process, with there being a identifiable lead in Section 106 of a member. We do carry out reviews, we are doing it, and those who know me know that I'm constantly asking questions about Section 106. So, you know, I just think that I still go with the recommendation, panel recommendation.
The officer recommendation. I think Councillor Vardy means the officer recommendation.
No, I think you meant the panel recommendation, is that right?
Yes. So what did I say?
Panel recommendation.
Well, that is the...
Sorry, on the panel recommendation, I'm just looking at the precise wording and listening to everyone else. So at the end of the panel recommendation, it references for a review to be completed to identify areas of improvement. I think what we've been talking about is actually not for another review to be completed, but for conditions to be continuously reviewed for the benefit of best practice. Yes. Okay.
I take on board what Councillor Vardy said, but if planning officers are not aware that there's an issue with the Section 106, that's not going to be discussed at the quarterly meetings, and
individual members do have some issues with Section 106 and how officer retention and how things are dealt with within the department. So I still stand by what I said, that I think an internal review of how management oversight of... It's the smaller Section 106 is that caused the problem, not the main ones, which I think is what you'll be discussing at your main meeting.
So on the basis... that we have just completed an internal review of 106s, I wonder whether we should actually review the recommendations that we had, whether actually we look at those against what's actually been achieved. Chief Exec.
Thank you, Leader. Would it be a sensible recommendation that the lead member continuously monitors the processes for dealing with Section 106 agreements and identifies any to identify any areas for improvement? So that's the lead member taking responsibility for that rather than a best practice review of the processes, because I think the comment's been made, the best practice review of processes quite recently being undertaken.
Happy with that. Councillor Rawlings.
Just looking at the recommendation four, it's a bit wider than just Section 106 agreements, and I think we shouldn't lose that. I think we should still include... I think looking at recommendation four, we should still include, in addition to 106's, reserve matters applications, pre-commencement conditions as well, as you know, part of this review process. It's not just focusing on Section 106 agreements and those processes there. It should be the wider... planning process, which is what I think panel recommendation four does seek to address.
Councillor Vardy, is there any point that you wish to address on that?
Now, I think we just need to keep our eye on what we're looking at. This is under a 5-year supply umbrella, and if we're widening it out to other aspects of Section 106, I think it will become... just another review of a review that took place just 2 or 3 years ago. I'm happy to take responsibility for Section 106, as indeed is in my portfolio description. And if I am informed of issues, then they will be, as they have been, investigated.
Okay. So as far as the... any other points anyone wishes to make?
Through you, Leader. Could I ask Councillor Vardy, is there one officer that keeps a sort of almost a database of each planning application, what the 106 details and that? So it's one officer perhaps keeping an eye that works with you? That's just a point of information, really.
No, there isn't.
Well, thank you, Leader. Richard might be able to correct me, but there is a process and a central record of all Section 106 agreements that contains all the key information. I think it's published on the website. The management of that is, there are various responsibilities of various officers depending on where the particular agreement is in its life cycle, and that all of that is looked at, as Councillor Vardy mentioned earlier, on a quarterly basis by an officer working group whose purpose is essentially to ensure that Section 106 funds are being effectively managed by the council. That does include, I believe, contact with other parties who are recipients of Section 106 funding, such as the NHS, police, etc. So there is quite an elaborate management process that supports the whole Section 106 agreement. And, of course, Councillor Vardy is part of all of that process because he attends those meetings on behalf of the Cabinet.
Okay. So, going back to the panel recommendation, can I ask that we, again, make use of our lead members on the basis that this is a Cabinet system and we each... have responsibility for our individual areas, and in that case, to actually insert the lead member for planning actually within that recommendation as being the focus of that review, and then on the basis that if there are issues, then that can be brought to the attention of us as Cabinet. Likewise, if the scrutiny bodies wish to scrutinise that particular item, they are obviously more than welcome to do so. But within the context of the five-year supply, I think we need to make sure that any of these recommendations relate back to the core of the review itself and the panel itself. So can I ask that the where it says pre-commencement conditions be continuously reviewed by the lead member for planning to identify any areas for improvement? In conjunction with relevant officers. Are we happy with that for the time being? Okay. Thank you. Right, now we're on to recommendation five. Councillor Vardy. Okay. Any comments? I mean, obviously, all of our programmes are influenced by outside bodies, whether it's be highways or government. So we try and keep to our programmes as far as we can, but there are always others that unfortunately have influences over the processes and the timescales. But otherwise, with that in mind, are people happy with that as a recommendation? Okay, so we have five recommendations. I think we have gone through them and agreed the wording. I'm not going to repeat the wording unless anyone is desperately unsure about what we've actually agreed to. But with that, can I ask Councillor Vardy whether you can actually just propose those five recommendations for the reasons already identified within the report? And then I'm going to ask Councillor Taylor to second. Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. Can I... Laura, have you written these down? I propose the recommendations as discussed this evening for the reasons given.
I'd like to second that recommendation, Leader.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much, and thank you particularly, Councillor Seaton, for presenting the panel and for the work that the panel's carried out. So we're now on to item seven. So if I can ask Councillor Seaton again, in her capacity as Chair of Policy Scrutiny Group this time, to come to the table. I'm going to briefly, on behalf of Councillor Harper-Davis, briefly introduce this item, which is that this is the Policy Scrutiny Group's review of the management of open spaces. And with that, I'm going to ask Adrian Ward, as our Head of Strategic Support, to present the remainder of the report. So you're sitting down, which is item one. Item two, I've literally said what this report is. Item three is now Adrian, who was busy dreaming of probably going to the pub.
Thank you, Leader. In a similar way to the previous item, there is a covering report from myself that sets out recommendations that the Scrutiny Management Board have asked to be passed on to Cabinet that's originated with the Policy Scrutiny Group. So the covering report sets out the Scrutiny Management Board's recommendations and their reasons, the response of the relevant officer being the Head of Cleansing and Open Spaces, and the officer recommendation in response to the Board's recommendation. And again, if I could just ask Cabinet to make sure that they are clear when they consider each of the recommendations for the purposes of the law and the minutes, what exactly it is you're deciding and the reasons for your decisions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm now going to ask Councillor Seaton to present the board's recommendations.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I haven't really got anything to present on this. It's amazing we can get three recommendations out of one comment that was made. Regarding the concerns that some members had about the service charges being put onto new builds and the inability of some to be able to pay for those. So they may be on benefits or whatever. So there was concern about what happens in those circumstances. Is it that the whole estate then has to pay a little bit extra to, or do the benefit system pay for the maintenance on the development as well? And I think it was the way that the charges go up with no redress. I mean, if it's a council tax, obviously it's publicised and you're elected members. But to have a maintenance company, and I know they are regulated, but it's not that easy. I own a flat and that has got a management company in, and it took us a long while to get that management company out and a new one in. A lot of red tape. But you also have got the mismanagement, the confusions on responsibilities, escalating charges without being able to challenge. And I think it was bringing to the forefront, to the Cabinet's attention, that is going to be, we thought, a problem in the future. Along with the fact that a lot of companies are not prepared to pay the 20-year maintenance charge for the green spaces to be adopted by Charnwood. So really, it's a case of just bringing it to your attention and hoping that we're not building up a problem for in the future. But there's also, I think, something that could come out of this. We already manage parcels of those sites around Charnwood. Can we make our own management company? So that's another thought for the future. So that's it, really. Thank you.
Sorry, before you stand up, please sit down. It's been one of those evenings. So thank you very much for this. I have to say, before reading the report, it was an area that had been touched on, interestingly enough, probably about 9 months ago by... We have quarterly reviews with the myself and the chief exec with the two MPs, amongst other bodies as well. To make sure that we can assist with any queries or any problems that they have as far as residents are concerned. And interestingly enough, actually, the MP for Loughborough did actually raise this particular issue about 9 months ago in relation to one of her residents who had raised the query with them about the charges. So it was an area that we had talked about and certainly looked into. So it was quite interesting to see that your policy group had actually taken it up as an issue as well. Because it is something I think that with national legislation is something that I think particularly we are interested in because of obviously the quantity of building in particular with the sustainable urban extensions associated with precisely this area. So hopefully you found it as useful as an area to actually go into some sort of detail as I know I did probably 9 months ago when I looked into it as well. So with that, I'm going to ask whether there are any questions of clarity or further information to ask Councillor Seaton before we start discussing some of the items and invite Matt Bradford to the table. Brenda, thank you very much. And again, thank the group for all the work that they've put into this as well. Thank you. So if I can ask Matt Bradford, who's our Head of Cleansing and Open Spaces, to come to the table. And, Matt, if I can ask you to go over the three recommendations and any comment that you wish to add from your perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. Yes, if I just go through the recommendations in turn and make any comments or observations that I'd like to make you aware of first. The first recommendation was that the Cabinet was asked to make aware of the increasing use of management companies to manage open spaces on developments as an alternative to adoption by the Council. And I do agree that there is an increasing use of management companies in for the management of on-site open space. In fact, this is creeping into other areas as well, not just for this Council, but for other councils. And I've been in contact with developers that are introducing management charges for estate roads and communal parking and things like that as well. So there are other elements of new estates that are making these service charges as well, and it's come for an increase use. So I'd just like to agree really with that one, that it is happening more and more. The second recommendation was in relation to a number of specific issues, that the charges could be significant for local residents affected by them. And you're normally talking in the hundreds of pounds for those. There could be a lack of transparency in the way that the service charges are increased. These charges should be based on the cost of providing the service, and there shouldn't be a profit element there, although some of the management companies do have overheads attached and central recharges and things like that, which can make them expensive in some cases. There isn't a consideration of ability to pay the service charges that were levied. I'm not aware of any hardship funds or benefits applications that cover the payment of these charges, so residents that fall on times of financial hardship could find themselves having to pay this charge. And there was evidence that maintenance work was of low quality in some cases. I think we can really try and safeguard that through the Section 106 process and really make sure that our maintenance standards are transferred to whoever is managing the open spaces within the borough that are provided for members of the public. So I'm less concerned about that one, if I'm honest, although naturally, if more than one organisation is managing the open spaces throughout the borough, there will be some variances in how that's done. I think the recommendation three is quite interesting, really, in that it talks about the developer's willingness to offer open spaces for adoption by the council. Really, it's becoming less and less frequent that is the case. And we ask for a commuted sum to be paid to the council. That equates to 20 years maintenance of an open space that we adopt. So that money is paid upon adoption by the council to the council at the point of transfer, and that money is held against that open space, and that feeds into the budget on an annual basis and feeds into our budget year on year to meet the costs of meeting that. And I think there's a reluctance for developers to pay that 20 years maintenance sum. And obviously, through the use of management companies, there's an opportunity to pass all of those costs onto the residents that are moving in into that house, and that is the option that they are choosing at the moment. I did do some desktop research into the policies of other councils and their commuted sums and how they're calculated, and there is quite a variance, actually, in what I found. Some do ask for a shorter maintenance period, but I think we're around on par or in the middle ground, really, of what local authorities are asking for. And I think there's an increasing trend, actually, for local authorities to refuse to adopt any open spaces, sort of a blanket policy that they don't adopt anymore. And I found that happened in quite a number of cases. So there's a question there for the members of the cabinet to consider, really, where they want to go, really, and I'm happy to answer any questions that any members may have.
Thank you very much, Matt. We've got Councillor Sminovich, followed by Councillor Taylor. Did I say anyone? Then Councillor Rawlings, and then Councillor Mercer. Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. A few years ago, when I was sitting on planning, there seemed to be a spate of applications. We noticed fences had been put up from the bottom of gardens and suddenly a fence appeared. And then locally, I can remember one planning meeting where we debated and debated. And I think a period of time, I can't remember now whether it was 10 years or 20 years, had passed. And there was a piece of green space that somebody wanted to build on. And unfortunately, it wasn't known whether the council owned it or whether the management company. And it was sort of left out in the open. I think in the end, the actual we had to give permission, and I think Councillor Seaton's nodding at me, we debated long and hard. So we lost that piece of land that the residents had actually thought was just a nice open space for children to play, and that's what had happened. But it was happening within a sort of two-year period. It came up a lot in planning, and when they went back to the planning application, there'd not been any sort of final notes at the bottom as to anything. It had sort of been, the development had been approved, but the little parcels of land that everybody thought was theirs just to play on or whatever, we lost them to yet another house, tucked in, squeezed in. So that part of it worries me, and I'd like to have seen that tied up with whatever a planning application.
Through you, Leader, if I can come back. The use of any public open space that's been acquired through development, that should be secured through the development agreement, and it should state that that should remain as public open space, maintained in a certain way, and it should be open space in perpetuity. I can't comment on the individual case that you mentioned, Councillor Smidovitz, there, but certainly on the cases that I'm seeing coming through, that is tied up quite tightly, so that will remain open space in the future. Obviously, if that happened in the past, then something obviously happened there that didn't quite go to plan. But those that are being considered at the moment are do have some quite restrictions around how they're used. Yeah.
Thank you, Leader. Especially in my ward, I've got experience of this. You know, there are new developments coming through that have been offered to a management company, and I've also got some estates that are managed through a management company, and they're managed quite badly, and they do look a bit of an eyesore. My question is, do you know if the registered providers that are looking after affordable housing, do they take that maintenance charge on themselves, or do they then pass it on to their residents within our social housing?
Through you, Leader, I'm not sure, if I'm honest, of the answer to that question, whether registered social landlords charge the residents, pass that charge on to the householder, and similarly in private tenancies, whether the landlord or the tenant is responsible. I suppose that depends on each individual tenancy agreement between the landlord and tenant in each circumstance.
Yeah, just say, obviously, one of the recommendations is that people's inability to pay, and if they're in social housing, they're possibly in there because they're on a low income, and to add a maintenance charge on top of them that might be something we can look into.
Thank you. In terms of the calculations for the kind of 20-year maintenance contributions, are we factoring in council tax? Because, looking at it in a very simple way, but 100 new houses are built, there's some open space, but that's 100 new houses paying council tax to the authority. And I'm not quite sure how that's reconciled with then asking or saying we're not going to adopt or we want 20 years' worth of maintenance when you've got 20 years' worth of council tax being paid by ratepayers. And I'm not quite sure how the average resident of Chelmsford on the street would understand why there's a 20-year commuted sum and council tax being paid when you could say, well, aren't they for the same thing? I appreciate, obviously, the council tax is much broader than that, but it covers open space in other parts of the borough.
Thank you, Councillor Rollins. If I could come back, please, Leader, on that point. The calculation that's made is quite simple. It's based on the annual maintenance cost on our current maintenance rates multiplied by the number of years, so it doesn't take account of any council tax adjustment for housing growth within the borough.
I'm assuming that the 20-year sum, if that was the alternative to actually pass it on, that 20-year sum would end up being passed on through the costs of the properties when they're actually purchased. So, in effect, I suspect the developers are effectively charging lower prices for their property by actually effectively charging the actual owners or the tenants or the property users via the maintenance charges instead. So it seems to be a choice that developers are making, selling properties for lower costs rather than necessarily commuting the sum as a 20-year payment. So, Councillor Mercer, sorry, was there something that Chief Executive wanted to add?
think the other issue on council tax is it's not really hypothecated to a specific expenditure line. So the counter argument would be every household's paying council tax. Why is that council tax being spent on maintenance on one particular area? It may not be spent on their area. So it's the question of specifics versus the general with that. So it is quite commonplace for the cost of open space to be borne by, if you like, those who enjoy it. Those are the residents of that area.
Councillor Mercer.
Thanks. Matthew, can I just ask, you said these companies aren't profit-making. Is there any evidence that some of the developers are using companies that will manage them for a number of different developers, which would actually be profit-making?
There are management companies that manage for a number of developers across a number of sites, and there are some quite big organisations that perform this task actually. I don't have any evidence that they are profit-making. It's just that they're distributing making their organisations bigger, and maybe economies of scale mean that they can provide services cheaper for a number of different developments. These management organisations are regulated, and it is stipulated that they shouldn't be making a profit, and as far as I'm aware, that is the case.
Are there any further questions of Matt before we... Councillor Vardy.
As usual, briefly, Leader. Councillor Mercer. Yes, I read something in the news quite recently about this, and in fact the proliferation of ground rent increases being managed and raising so they're not affordable by people who have bought the property. There is, I understand from that, and I can't remember too much detail of this, that there is some work being carried out at government level about concerns about this. So I actually welcome this. I think it's a well-founded observation by members about the difficulties in buying houses nowadays. It's bad enough being able to afford one. It's very difficult. And then when you get them, you get all these little add-ons like ground rent and about this maintenance charges. I just think it's something that we should be concerned about, and we should be thankful that we are aware of it. This council is aware of it, and we should continue to keep a weather eye on it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Vardy. Suddenly a countdown clock appeared as you were speaking, saying a power off in 4 minutes. So I just wondered whether that was in response to your opening remarks or not. I don't know. Oh, no, it's gone now. So no other comments before we release Matt. Matt, thank you very much for that. Can I just summarise, really, we've got three recommendations. I think probably listening to everyone, I think probably everyone is content with those three recommendations from the panel. I think if we can note recommendations one and two for the reasons given, that would seem appropriate. As far as recommendation three is concerned, as I mentioned before, this is a subject matter that's come up with the MPs, or at least with one of them, and I'm more than happy at our next regular meetings to actually raise this again formally on behalf of Cabinet and also the policy group as an area of concern. We'll hand them this particular report so they can go away and actually read it as well. So if that's possible to summarise that in some sort of coherent way, Laura, for the reasons stated, I think within the report. If anyone wishes to comment on those three recommendations or the two notes and one recommendation, please say so. Are there any other points anyone wishes to make? Councillor Taylor.
Is there some way we can keep a watchful eye on that and bring it back at some point just to see where we are with it?
We could possibly bring it back to Cabinet in maybe 12 months from now just to see if anything's changed. Are we happy with that? Okay. So that could be recommendation four, perhaps, for the reasons of keeping on top of it.
Leader, it's normal that when scrutiny recommendations come to Cabinet, there is a reporting process back to scrutiny to monitor the implementation, and they would normally have a report in 6 months and 12 months. So you obviously you can bring a report here, but it will be going back through scrutiny. You may be satisfied just to leave that as a monitoring system. That's automatic. So you wouldn't need recommendation for if you're content to do it that way.
I'm looking at Councillor Seaton. Are you happy that that's enough? Okay. Okay, in that case, scrap. Item four. Right. In that case, if I can propose those recommendation one to note, recommendation two to note, and recommendation three as I set out. As a proposal, can I ask Councillor Boker to second? Can I see all of those in favour? That's brilliant. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to everyone for this evening. Councillor Seaton in particular for presenting those two reports. Councillor Gerrard for listening to us and for all those officers involved this evening. And good night.